From Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me. Well, we've been talking a lot on air about what the elimination of federal funding for public media means to our station. Coming up tonight, we get more details on what it means to public media organizations of all kinds in New York State. I talked to Kate Harlow of New York Focus about her investigation into the potential impacts of this loss of funding. And keep looking up, because tonight we are checking in with the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum. We'll learn about the weekly meetings that it hosts of the United Friends Observers Society, or UFOs, or maybe UFOs. Radio Catskill's Annie Bennett has that story at the end of our program. But first, we're going to start with news from Albany, where Governor Kathy Hochul says the days of nonpartisan redistricting in New York should be over, and she says the Texas Republicans are to blame. WNYC's John Campbell reports.
The governor welcomed six Texas lawmakers to the state capitol in Albany, all of them Democrats who fled their home state to derail Republican efforts to redraw the congressional map. Hochul says if the GOP does overhaul the Texas map, Democrats in New York should do the same.
This is a war. We are at war. And that's why the gloves are off, and I say bring it on.
But New York's constitution doesn't allow for redistricting until the next census. Amending it is a multi-year process that requires voter approval. The earliest that could happen is for the 2028 congressional elections. In Albany, I'm John Campbell for the New York Public News Network.
In nearby Orange County, New York, 20 people have been charged in what officials are calling the largest gun trafficking case in county history. WAMC Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Jesse King reports.
District Attorney David Hoover says an eight-month undercover investigation into a pair of interconnected gun and drug trafficking rings led to the arrest of 19 people, both in and out of the county, Wednesday. Over the course of the investigation, Hoover says officers seized nearly 70 firearms, $65,000 in cash, and more than 1.5 kilos of cocaine and fentanyl.
Enough fentanyl to kill 190,000 residents of Orange County. The 20 people on the boards to my immediate left are nothing more than merchants of death.
Hoover says the rings were centered in Newburgh, and many of the guns were shipped to New York from Georgia and Pennsylvania. Police are still searching for one suspect, 52-year-old Carl Henry of East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. Those arrested face charges including conspiracy, criminal sale and possession of a firearm, and criminal sale and possession of a controlled substance. In Poughkeepsie, I'm Jesse King for the New York Public News Network.
Thank you to the New York Public News Network for those stories. Well, a few weeks ago, Congress voted to take back more than $1 billion in funding that it had already promised to public media organizations just like ours here at Radio Catskill, organizations across the country. President Trump quickly signed that rescissions package into law, defunding USAID and a myriad of international diplomatic initiatives along the way. But on the public media end of things, on Friday, we also learned that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting would be shutting down this year, which is not actually something that we were expecting here at Radio Catskill. For more on how much public media organizations in New York State will lose and how they are responding, I spoke with Kate Harlow of New York Focus earlier this afternoon. Started off by asking her how and why she started digging into this story.
I think there's a few different answers to that question. One is that just at the highest level, when we got the news that Congress canceled over $1 billion in federal funding, that sent a lot of folks into kind of a tailspin trying to figure out what the consequences of that are going to be. On the one hand, we've had some heads up that this was coming, but on the other, there really hadn't been like a clear public accounting of what each state was going to lose, or I should stick to New York State, which is what I know best. But in New York State's case, there had not been like a public accounting of, okay, total, how much federal funding does New York State stand to lose as a result of these cuts? So that was the spark of the idea, was like, it might be good to have a sense of how these cuts are going to affect public stations and public media organizations across the state as a whole. But also personally, I mean, obviously I'm a journalist. I've written for public media. But I've also lived all over New York State and in some of the rural areas that we cover in this article. And I personally have experience with how much information these outlets can provide to rural areas in particular. So there was kind of a personal layer to it as well that I was just interested to see what some of the impacts might be.
You know, and going by your bio at New York Focus, like you, it's not like you have like a set beat necessarily at New York Focus, but you do make note that you often write about media system reform. And you've worked with newsrooms and journalists to research and practice democratic participatory forms of journalism. So it sounds like public media is something that you'd be familiar with then.
That's right. Yeah, I've been involved in writing about or researching these topics for a very long time. I've been in journalism for about 10 years, and I'd say 5 to 6 of those years, I've been pretty focused on this beat generally. So I also have some contextual knowledge about, you know, the history of public media in the U.S. and how it all works here and what kind of media system we've set up both across the country and in New York State in particular. So I was really interested to see kind of what the fallout would be here in New York.
And the big thing that you found in doing this accounting for New York State and doing this research, you found that of that, you know, more than $1 billion that is being cut from public media at the federal level, you've identified that New York State stands to lose at least $57 million in federal funding over 2 years. That means public media organizations within New York State, this money wasn't going to the New York State government. But that's the number you're able to put on it, $57 million over 2 years. Bigger picture, what else did you find out when you're trying to measure the scope of this impact?
Yeah, I mean, what a great question. I think it's hard to quantify what some of these monetary losses mean because there's so much that stations across the state depend on the CPB for. And I think in some ways, it's too early to even get into the weeds of how much is going to be lost because stations across the state are still figuring that out. I mean, just since this article published, we heard the news that you mentioned that the CPB is officially shutting down, and there are all sorts of things that the CPB does beyond community television and radio grants, which provides, you know, more of the funding that people might think of as the traditional CPB funding. There's all sorts of things, music license rights, the emergency broadcast program. There's all sorts of things. So I think on one level, there's a lot that remains to be seen as what will be lost. But even within this $57 million that I estimated based on estimates that CPB recipients across the state provided to me, speaking to television and radio stations, there's all sorts of things that they told me they're not going to be able to do as a result of losing this funding, ranging from cutting staff positions, cutting reporters reporter positions that they were hoping to hire, changing how the reporters are able to cover the areas that they cover. You know, there's a lot of kind of complexity in how the CPB funding model works. I tried in the article to keep it as simple as possible. But in essence, smaller or stations that are smaller or that serve rural areas tend to rely more on this federal funding. So there's quite a bit that stands to be affected by this loss for those stations.
Well, one of the first things that I noticed in this article, not like I was just, you know, reading it to read about ourselves here at Radio Catskill, but also, you know, I love whenever there's graphs or charts in a New York Focus article, it's a great way to access the information quickly. So the first thing I look at is the chart. And what I noticed, and you basically say how much do various stations stand to lose, and you were focusing primarily on stations that were based in a rural area or whose broadcast range serves rural areas, regardless of where they're based. And what I noticed is Radio Catskill, we're actually the public radio station that stands to lose the most in this graph that you have here. There's two stations above us.
Yeah.
They're both public television stations. And here on our end, we've been, you know, focusing on the positive about, you know, how we can move forward. I've been here at this organization a long time. I've just been feeling good that compared to where we were 10 years ago, we're in much better shape to try to weather the storm, whatever the storm is. But then to kind of see it in black and white, to see like, you know, the 25% that we're, and of course, you know, we heard stories about some stations like up in Alaska losing almost 70% of their budget. So the fact that we're losing about 24, 25 percent of our budget. I didn't think that was that bad. But then when I see it alongside of all these other stations, it's like, wow, we're losing one of the biggest chunks of our budget in the state.
Yeah, I think that's a really great point. I'm glad you liked the graphics. Those are always hard to pull together in some ways, as I'm sure you know. But I felt it was important in this station to try, or in the story to try to illustrate this, because one of the important things about CPP funding in general, but also the way it distributes in New York State, is that, you know, stations, as you know, rely on a variety of income sources, and federal funding is just one of them. But one thing that is true about that model is that stations in rural areas, or that serve rural areas, tend to have, you know, a less deep network of donors, just smaller communities in general to draw on to fund their work. So what we found was that stations serving rural areas, though the total amount that they're going to lose may be smaller than like a station in New York City, it represents a much larger percentage of their annual budget. So I'm glad you pointed that out.
Okay. But I wanted to ask you, like, why this is, I mean, basically you're speaking to, this is a line that you have in the article, is that the federal public media funding model leaves rural stations especially vulnerable. So it sounds like you're saying that part of the reason why is because by the nature of a rural station, you just have less population density. Are there other less factors involved?
Yeah, that's a good question. In general, a station relies on, as I mentioned, a variety of other sources of funding, which includes things like large and small donors, underwriters, commercial sponsors, state funding, and foundations. And it's not just that there's, you know, a smaller population, but also probably less foundation service in the area, less commercial sponsors to draw from. So kind of all of those things are a bit thinner in the smaller, more rural areas, if that makes sense. So whereas in New York City, you have many more foundations or funding sources that might be able to cover that gap.
Right. And I guess it's also that rural stations are doing the work of covering other gaps in the local information ecosystem. And that's something that you talk about in the article, too, is just like what the current state of news organizations was in New York State before this even happened. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure thing. Yeah, I had the privilege of actually working with New York Focus to run a statewide listening tour a couple years ago. We ran it from 2023 to 2024. And what that really meant in practice was that we spent about a year going around the state and meeting with people in communities across the state to do listening sessions and understand the state of local news. We also ran a statewide survey to kind of research the state of things. At a high level, there's research from the UNC Hussman School of Journalism that kind of conveys big picture. New York has 13 counties with only one newspaper and one county with none at all. And what we found in this listening tour is that even in areas where there are outlets still, many have skeleton staffs. And one of the big things we heard from community members when we toured the state was that they struggle to find basic civic information about public meetings, just about elected officials, about benefits for which they're eligible, about emergencies, just really fundamental public information that people need to live their lives. So to your point, rural stations or stations servicing these more rural areas are providing not just local news, but so much basic information that people need to understand what to do in case of a flood, understand where to vote down the street, all this kind of basic information. And even before these federal cuts to public media, local news in the state was struggling. I think that when we hear about news deserts, people often think about maybe red states or states that are primarily rural. You know, we have New York City in New York State, and we have a state budget that's one of the largest in the nation. But that doesn't mean that there aren't these huge portions of the state that are struggling to get this basic information. And yeah, public media stations have been doing important work to fill that gap. So, it's a big part of what will be affected by these cuts.
And the fact that, you know, rural stations are already up against it in terms of, you know, not having as much population density or financial density in terms of orgs and other funding options there. But then also what we just talked about there are those are the areas that are most likely to be on the verge of being a news desert. So that underscores the importance there. And then there's another kind of counterintuitive thing based into this weird inversion of fact. It's like, you know, even though smaller stations underserving rural area. Sometimes now you're talking about a much bigger geographic area than some other places. And you quote our colleagues at North Country Public Radio saying we have a coverage area the size of Switzerland.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually grew up on the northern edge of the North Country, so I'm intimately familiar with that whole area. But I actually didn't know that fact until NCPR's station manager, who I interviewed for the story, Mitch Teich, shared that with me. And that was one of the things he spoke about when he talked about what these cuts are going to mean for North Country Public Radio. I think most stations want to cut personnel as like a last resort. And so they're looking at every other option before that. And one of the options they might have to consider at NCPR is changing how reporters travel. They tend to pay for the costs of reporters to travel all over this coverage area, which is, as you mentioned, the size of Switzerland. And they have a new staff of 6 people. I can't remember exactly how many of those are reporters, but it's not a huge number of people to be covering that large geographic area with all of those towns. So they tend to pay reporters to go out and see things in person so they can, you know, verify things in person and report things as accurately as possible. But this is one of the things that might have to be adjusted as a result of these cuts.
Now, this isn't really what you were looking into. I mean, you were looking into what's the impact on stations and then, you know, or public media providers and organizations. What's the impact on organizations? But then also, you know, how are they going to deal with those impacts? But I'm wondering, even at this level of reporting, are you hearing anything from elected officials, New York State officials, any kind of response from them in any of this and any potential, you know, legislative or budgetary response?
Yeah, that's a good question. So New York State did a kind of anticipatory funding, knowing that this was coming. New York State has long provided some amount of funding to public media stations. So this is, again, this is separate than the federal funding that these stations receive. And this year, the legislature approved, I think, about $14 million in funding for public broadcasting, $13 million of which will go to TV. TV tends to get more, I understand, because the expenses are so high for production. But this year, this spring, the legislature also increased funding for public radio with a $4 million pot that will be split evenly between 16 stations. And as I understand it, that was in anticipation of these CPB cuts, these federal cuts that were coming. I know that stations are hopeful that this will become a permanent part of the equation, they said, that this funding will be re-upped every year. I definitely think there's hope among the folks I interviewed for this story that the state will step up to help fill some of this gap. And I get into in the article a little bit some of the efforts the state legislature has made over the past few years to help local news outlets in general. But I haven't seen anything in the past, you know, week or two with any more specific than that, I guess I would say.
All right. Kate, as we wrap up here, is there anything else that you want folks to know that we haven't gone over yet?
You know, I think you alluded to this earlier in our conversation, but a lot of this sounds like really bad news. And it's definitely deflating for those of us who have worked in public media, have supported public media, who rely on public media to help us stay informed about our local communities. But I will say one of the things I heard interviewing station leaders across the state was an attitude of just total refusal to back down. And I think you kind of expressed this a little bit earlier, but a lot of folks told me, like, this is just really clarifying. We're doubling down on our mission, just really refusing to give up. So, and most of these stations I spoke with were well aware that these cuts could be coming and had kind of plans in place to launch should the cuts come. And already many stations are fundraising to try and fill this gap that they're feeling as a result of the federal funds. So as disappointing as it may be for those of us who rely on public media, I think there is reason to hope that a lot of people are going to be fighting for it to survive in the state.
The article is called New York Public Media Will Lose at Least $57 Million in Federal Funds After Congressional Cuts. We've been talking to the article's author, Kate Harlow. It's up now at nysfocus.com. Kate, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've got more to come. Don't miss our conversation with the folks who are keeping an eye on the skies above Pine Bush. UFOs watching UFOs. Stay with us.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. The funding cuts will hit October 1st, and they will likely hit small rural newsrooms like this one especially hard. This community could lose access to local news, national reporting from NPR, music and cultural programming, and crucial emergency alerts. Please help safeguard this free public service by donating today. Here's how.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Democrats could take back the Congress by flipping three seats. If Donald Trump gets five new seats in Texas, that majority becomes eight seats. It is more than doubling the entire cushion of the current Republican majority.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on the Daily from the New York Times.
It's a local edition. I'm Jason Dole. In Pine Bush, New York, in Orange County, the United Friends Observers Society, or UFOs, are starting weekly meetings again. Pine Bush has been dubbed the UFO capital of the East Coast, and it's home to the Pine Bush UFO and Paranormal Museum, which hosts the group every week as it discusses all things supernatural and extraterrestrial. The club stopped meeting regularly in 2023, but they came back this spring due to popular demand. Dr. Bill Wyand is the club leader. Radio Catskill's Andy Bennett spoke with him over the phone about the group's history and his own personal experience.
Thank you so much for being here. So a couple of years ago, 2023, the group stops meeting, and you just started up again a few months ago. It's pretty exciting.
Well, we stopped it because everybody who used to come to the meeting has gotten older and they've dropped out. But now we have a new group that comes around because there's new things happening. And just generally to someplace to go in and talk about things that you really can't talk to at work. But the group was originally set up for people who claim to have had alien encounters, and it was founded in 1993 with just a couple people, but then it grew very, very fast. You could say what you wanted to say. No one would badger you. No one would make fun of you. And as far as I can remember, we never told someone they couldn't come or they couldn't speak. We did not allow taping, recording, or writing down of names or anything. Back then, it was really tough to find anybody that you could safely talk to. Even family members it was tough.
Can you elaborate on that?
It was very, very tough for some people. If you went home and told your parents or your husband that you felt that you were removed from your home and encountered aliens on a spaceship, what would they think?
When it was first established, how did the news spread?
Well, the original people who started the group, they put in a little ad in the paper and said, have you ever seen a UFO? And it was about maybe an inch and a half high and maybe an inch wide. But the first week, they had two people call in. The next week, they had five. And after that, it just kept growing and growing.
And what was your first impression of it?
The club was founded in 93. I probably came in just a couple months after it started.
Oh, okay. So you've really been involved since the beginning.
Yes. And it was a mother-daughter team that did it. They set up the meetings. A lot of the people who came, they were always afraid that they were being followed, always afraid that things would happen because of all of the sci-fi movies out there.
Walk me through your first meeting. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? What's it look like?
When I went in, there was just a whole bunch of people sitting around at tables. Once the meeting started, people got up, introduced themselves, and they made any kind of announcement that were going on in town with the, you know, where to go, what was going on. There was a number of places that we would sit around and watch the sky and talk about things. There was people making movies that came from England. It was always interesting. When we had the meetings, we could tell there was always people who would come and they were wannabes. In other words, they wanted to be involved, but they had no experience. And there was a few people who were in charge of the meeting, like the core group, who could actually tell if the person was telling a story or if he was just rambling on and doing things. And the rules were no badgering, no recording, none of that. So it was totally anonymous. Didn't have to even say your name.
I see. What do you mean by badgering?
No questions. It's like you have something to say. You can say it. No one questions you. No one disagrees. After a couple of meetings, maybe you become more comfortable to say things and to learn things.
And what about your personal experience? Can I ask about that?
Well, do you think that we're the only planet out of the billions of galaxies that has a type of life like us on it? I believe I've been having experience with other beings since I was a very, very young boy. They would come take me out of the house, go through the window. I can actually feel the screen and see the trees glow. It was like the trees were shimmering. And it would take me out and up somewhere and talk to me about things and then bring me back.
How does Pinebush compare to other areas of the world in terms of UFO presence and paranormal activity?
Well, supposedly we're up at the UFO center of the universe in the Northeast. A lot of books were written. A lot of people still see things. There's a hotel that's supposedly haunted. There's all kinds of ghost stories, and they do ghost walks and all of these things. It's just, that's what the premise is for the town.
Why should people come out and join the club?
Well, it's curiosity. They'll talk about what's happening to people, what's changing in the world. Some people just know that they're not alone. You look at the sky and you wonder, when are they going to come back? It just feels like you want to learn something. That's it. It's the first Wednesday of the month, and it's at the Pine Bush UFO Paranormal Museum.
Do you have any message to people that are skeptical about the club?
It's like going to a movie. You know, not all movies are good. The meetings may not all be good for you, but if you got free time and you want to learn, go to the Pine Bush Museum first. See all the things that supposedly it happened in Pine Bush. And then if you want to come in and ask questions and do stuff, it's the first Wednesday of the month at 7 o'clock.
Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
From Liberty, I'm Annie Bennett for Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much, Annie Bennett, for that report. Thanks again to our news partners of the New York Public News Network, and thank you for being here with us tonight. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back again tomorrow night. I'll be back every day to keep on making news and making good radio as long as listeners like you stand with the station and stand up and be counted now in our time of need. Just giving you a reminder that if you have not given recently to Radio Catskill, if you've not given ever to Radio Catskill, but you're listening to this program, we really could use your support right now because, as you may have heard, we've lost about 25% of our budget that we were counting on for the next couple of years. In fact, we were counting on that money being in some of that money for the last quarter of this year being in our accounts by October. And that's not going to happen now. So we're rapidly trying to make up that shortfall as we continue to make the best news, local talk, conversations, and music and entertainment programs for you every day here at Radio Catskill. Please support the station when you get a chance. Go to WJFFradio.org. Laura Flanders and Friends is up at 7, followed by Sabrina Artell's Trailer Talk. But stay with us now for The Daily, here on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
Support comes from the Jeffersonville Area Chamber of Commerce's Sunday Market, running weekly behind Jeffersonville Bake Shop, 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., featuring local farmers, artists, makers, and community organizations with live music and family-friendly activities, Memorial Day through Labor Day. More information at jeffersonvilleny.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. Calicoontheater.com.
This is Latif Nasser from Radiolab. Public media organizations across the country lost our federal funding. This cut will have long-term consequences for the service we provide to you, our community, unless we are able to replace that funding with support from more of our listeners. The future of public media is in your hands. Go to this station's website to start or increase your monthly sustaining donation today.
Give now at WJFFradio.org.
Hey, this is Matt Hurtado. Join me for Virtual Soundscapes, your gateway to the best music in gaming.
classic tracks from the 8-bit era, modern releases, and interviews with the minds behind the games. Thursday night at 10 on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. You're listening to Radio Catskill.